Hello there, and welcome to the Truly Horrible NBA Podcast.
Welcome I'm your back host. To the Truly Horrible NBA Podcast.
Yeah, welcome back. Thank you for rejoining again. I'm your host, Connor Allen, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Daniel Porter.
That's me. I'm Daniel Porter.
So, we're going to take the opening of this podcast to address a few things we've heard and feedback from listeners. So, first, we are working on intro music. It's coming along. Unfortunately, you know, for podcasts listened to by millions of people, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that needs to be taken care of.
I mean, you know, we got sample clearance and, like, look, you know, we're trying to pull some strings. We're trying to use the enormous amount of clout that we've garnered as a result of this podcast. But, you know, even the level of clout we have doesn't just get you everything in life.
Yeah. And we have to work out revenue sharing agreements and all of that. Look, it's a process, but you have
Connor
to trust
and I,
it.
Connor and I spend several hours a day arguing over the profits from this podcast. It's been an intense negotiation, and
but
it makes us better.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes us better at what we do. We need to address some recent criticisms.
Yeah, well, we'll get there.
We're
so,
not
yeah.
at the criticisms.
The first one.
I just want to say there's some criticisms coming, and be ready for that.
Yeah. So the first criticism, we will unfortunately not be learning how to cut audio on Audacity. Unless the podcast gets sponsored, of course. It's just one of those things where...
It's just like, you don't care, we don't care. You can still understand what we're saying. It might not sound as good as it would otherwise, but this way it's more real and authentic, you know?
Yeah, and if the moments of silence bother you, I actually would encourage you to download the podcasting app Overcast. It does a good job of editing out silences, and so it's just a really good way to address that. And, like, that's my favorite podcasting app. That's what
you
I use.
You could also consider getting over it.
Or downloading Overcast. Two
that's
options.
An option.
Now, also, building off some of the criticism we received from a listener, we will be accepting feedback at the end of each episode.
Especially positive feedback.
But also...
Negative feedback? I think before you offer us any negative feedback, you should first turn internally and ask yourself, am I being a hater?
But if you want to send feedback about things we may have gotten wrong on the episode, we'll appreciate that. For instance, last episode, I wrongly said that Alex Len was coming off his rookie contract, when in reality, he was coming off his qualifying offer. Now, I would like to point out that technically speaking, a qualifying offer is a stipulation that exists within a rookie contract. So in a way, it still
it's
is
a gray area
of
for sure. But shout out to our listener, Joseph G. from Log Lake, Minnesota.
Yeah,
we're not exactly sure who that is, but he hit us up after, you know, he's been a pretty devoted fan of the podcast. I think he might have his own basketball aspirations. Maybe to have a podcast of his own someday. But, you know, he hit us up, he reached out, made that clarification, and, you know, I think that it helped because we needed to realize that, you know, and not every aspect of the podcast was totally airtight yet. We still had some things we needed to improve on and, like, make sure we really knew the contract status specifically of every player. So, thanks,
and,
Joe.
Yeah, and, yeah, thanks for the feedback, Joseph. It's been really appreciated. That's how you get better. This is what we're trying to do, you know, improve.
We all want to get better.
And then, so the final thing we want to address is just, we're going to actually read any reviews that come in, both 5-star or 4-star. Unfortunately, we will not be reading.
I think we should read all the reviews.
That we're not going to be reading the 1, 2, or 3-star reviews,
okay,
unfortunately.
I'm going to start a separate podcast, which is just reading the 1, 2, and 3-star reviews for this podcast. But please rate that podcast 5 stars.
All right. So the review comes from number 1 NBA Fab. Not fan. Interesting.
That
fab.
Person sounds like they were such a big NBA fan that they were in such a hurry to type that screen name that they spelled the word fan wrong, if I had to guess. All right. Read the review.
Really enjoy the perspective in this podcast. Nice to see a podcast focused on the part of the NBA ignored by most media outlets. Well, thank you very much, number one NBA Fab. It's really great to have our first review.
We're so glad to have all these listeners on board. It's been a roller coaster for sure, but you know, thanks for riding the wave with us.
I'm pretty curious actually which one of my friends who I like Facebook message tell them to leave a 5-star review actually did it, because that's the real friend. I need to figure that out.
You gotta interrogate everyone, because everyone probably tell you they did, you know.
Yeah, but only one person
only
did.
One person is really the number one NBA
right, yeah.
fan.
So 547 Facebook friends are lying right now.
Should we get into the hard-hitting content, what
yeah.
people are here for?
Yeah, we apologize, but we had to clear up some things. Right. So today we're focusing in on kind of doing a look back on the Brooklyn Nets rebuild, kind of how they got to this point.
We're going to talk about what has been a pretty dark period for basketball in Brooklyn. You know, we're feeling kind of sadistic today. But seriously, you know, we're finally at the end now of the period in which they've owed their draft picks to the Celtics. And it's an interesting case study for how the importance of the draft in the league and why it has to be structured the way it is to give hope to bad teams.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you don't have any reason for hope, you become what Brooklyn has been these past years.
Right. And I don't want to say that there's been nothing good that happened in Brooklyn. You know, there's been interesting stuff. It's just that been the idea of them.
There's been some flashes every once in a while. This year, it was a like small moral victory to just not be like really one of the absolute worst teams in the league. But it's been a dark time.
Yes.
I'm sure they've lost some fans. Especially, imagine if you were a New Jersey Nets fan who still kind of followed the team. Like, at this point, they've left you behind, abandoned your state, and now they're just, like, the most bleak outlook in the NBA for years.
Yeah.
But we think it's starting to take a turn for the positive, and it is interesting to look. They've made a few shrewd moves amidst the, like, terrible, terrible position that they've been in.
Yeah, and I actually...
For a couple years now, we've been operating under the assumption that they're actually, like, now... under Sean Marks, a pretty smart team. And so that's kind of what the purpose of this podcast is to just kind of revisit his tenure and show that trend.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to it as we go along through, but I mean, for me, Sean Marks is, I mean, that's one of the, he's like one of the best GMs in the league, I view as. I think he does a really great job. So just starting off, kind of we looked at the rebuild and we said it really began when Paul Pierce left the team and signed with the Washington Wizards on July 13th, 2014.
A fateful day.
Yeah, it's really the end of that team they went all in on, where they traded, you know, the infamous Boston-Brooklyn trade, where they traded away all their firsts and got Paul Pierce and KG. And Paul Pierce leaving ultimately showed that they did all that for 1 year of contention. Definitely really frustrating. But I actually do think that, for the most part, moving forward here, almost every move is a good move, or at least an understandable move, which suggests that even before Sean Marks came in, this...
They were already trending in a positive direction.
And
I mean, it did take them a good long while before they finally fired Billy King. And then weirdly, in like Nets fashion, they had kept Billy King around as a consultant to find his replacement, the guy who made that trip. But yet, the process worked because they ended up with Sean Marks. So,
absolutely.
Or at least they, you know, delivered a good hire.
Yeah. So then, kind of...
They've done some smart stuff, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just like, I mean, it doesn't really matter, ultimately. Like, none of these moves are likely to impact their long-term franchise trajectory. Like, now they're probably just going to tank, and they might even have heavy roster turnover in the next couple of years to the point where the guys that we're talking about as, like, potential assets are really more of trade chips than actually being part of a good Nets team going forward. But they could be in even worse position than they are now, and that's still worth talking about and, you know, going forward. Things could start to look up there, but we just think they definitely need to throw away next season.
Yeah,
you gotta, now that you finally have a first, you got
to
get it.
Yeah, you need to get, and that needs to be a top pick. I mean, I actually think if you look through the moves made by Sean Marks and like the team just in general, building from the place of just having none of their picks, or you know, the pick swaps being picks in the 20s from the Celtics, they managed to generate a fair amount of value, almost something like you would expect, maybe like a net total return. Something like one of those picks they end up losing actually like was on their roster. So that's like the benefit of having the smart GM around, is that they're able
to
generate
that value.
They did a good
job. I mean, they drafted Caris LeVert and Jared Allen with picks in the 20s in the last couple years. Those are both steals.
But you're still starting from a place so behind everyone else.
And you can only, right, like, I mean, it's not like those steals they got in the 20s are transcendent players. They're just nice guys.
Yep. So let's dive into this rebuild, kind of go through move by move.
We're going to do like 8 or 10 or some of the most significant moves, we're going to grade them dating back to when Paul Pierce left. That's kind of our cutoff.
Yep. So starting July 22nd, 2014, they signed Bojan Bogdanović. I gave this a B+, just in the sense of that he's a valuable player. It's a nice signing, and ultimately they were able to get a lot of good value for him by packaging him along with taking back bad salary, and they got a first, which we'll get to later, but I really liked that move. So I just felt like good quality signing. Nothing to like write home to mom about being amazing, but just like good solid stuff. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would have to, I'd have to agree with you there. I think a B+ is a super fair grade for that trade, or that signing rather. I mean, they didn't have to give up anything to get him. They were really strapped for talent, and then they ended up trading him for a first round pick, which was one of those picks in the 20s we were talking about, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't Bogdanović the Caris LeVert?
No, but
he was Jared Allen.
Jared Allen.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even know off the top of my head how they originally had Bogdanović's rights.
Yeah, so they got Bogdanović's rights originally through the Minnesota Timberwolves, actually. Huh. So his rights were traded by the Timberwolves to the Nets back in 2011, I want to say it was. I'm pretty sure summer 2011. And it was, I actually think it was at the 2011 draft. And the Wolves traded his rights to the Nets for a second round pick, which became Lorenzo Brown, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I mean, that's, you know, that's all good for the Nets. Shoot, if you can turn the second round pick into a first round pick 7 or 8 years later, however long later it was, that's cool. Yeah, I agree. B+ seems pretty fair for that Bogdanovich signing. I mean, you know, it's not like they were really competing against anyone to bring him over. It's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, maybe. But, I guess maybe view it as the asset acquisition in general and everything. Yeah. The next move they had was at the trade deadline, so February 19, 2015. They traded Kevin Garnett to the Timberwolves for Thaddeus Young. How would you grade this trade?
I would put that trade at, I mean, I think I'd have to give it an A-. It's pretty close to an A. I mean, here's the thing. KG, at that point in his career, he had way more value to Minnesota than any other franchise in the league because he wasn't really that good anymore, although he was a really good locker room guy. So it's not like he had no value around the league. But he didn't have that much on-court value because he couldn't play that much. But Minnesota has and will always have so much attachment to Kevin Garnett that it was like a no-brainer for them to give up Thaddeus Young. Like, what, they probably packed his bags for him in order to get KG back there. But Thaddeus Young, I mean, he re-signed with the Nets after that year. He
helped them make the playoffs.
He helped them make the playoffs, that's true. He was a genuinely good part of that team. And then he re-signed. I don't love the contract they ended up signing him to. What was that, 2015?
Yes, summer of 2015, but they were able to package it next.
But
the
they
next
ended
year
up getting
Pacers.
Good value for it. They got a first back for it from the Pacers. It passes the vaulted nay-nay test. So, you know, how much can I really hate on it? So, yeah, I would give that trade, the KG for Thad trade, an A-, because KG wasn't really, he didn't want to be in Brooklyn anymore, and he didn't really help them with what they were trying to do once they clearly weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, I gave it an A. I mean, I just went as far as just, like, to recognize that an asset you had an outsized value to one particular franchise and trade it to that franchise and get good value back for it. It's just, like, shrewd asset management. You have to, like, appreciate that and recognize it. And look, Billy King didn't do a great job for a long time, but you know what? Like, that's a really smart move. And then in the 2015 draft, so first they drafted Chris McCullough with the 29th pick. Look, we talk a lot about just taking...
Are we is that one of the moves we're grading?
We don't need to grade it. Not grade
I would give
pick.
That like a D.
Yeah,
a
but
D
it's a
minus.
Draft pick.
I mean, yeah, just, like, this is the 29th pick. Like, yep. The 29th pick is probably statistically likely to not be much of a player, but Chris McCullough really was not much of a player. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever play in the league again. He's out of the league right now.
Nope.
He could get it back. Like, guys flame out and come back every once in a while, but it's not the norm.
Yep, and I just... And then the other big... Actually, the big move of that draft, though, is actually the trade of Mason Plumlee and Pat Connaughton to the Portland Trail Blazers for Rodney Hollis-Jefferson and Steve Blake. That's a B+ to me. I think, you know, Rodney Hollis-Jefferson is better than Mason Plumlee, and you got an extra year of his rookie contract, which also makes that good value. It's not a steal in any way. It's not like an A move, but a good solid B+ for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you again on that one, that's a B+ for me too, just because, I mean, I might even, well, I guess it's just a B+ because it's so unspectacular, but it is a clear, good move. Maybe it's just a B. I'll go with a B, but it's like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I mean, I'm not really that enthusiastic about him going forward. He has been a nice role player and has given them some things to feel good about on some of these terrible teams, so I do respect what he's been. He's the longest tenured Net, which, you know, that says a lot about him and the Nets. But it is nice when the guys who were there during the bad years get to stick around and be on the good teams. I can't really necessarily project that to happen with him, but we'll see. It's just tough because he's like a 3-4 guy who can't shoot. But maybe his defense will keep him relevant. And I think he's a really good rebounder for his size.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where he... Look, if the shot even gets to the point where it's adequate, then he can be a championship
player. He's got to at least be able to hit open threes, so you can't just leave him. But right now, if he were on a playoff team, he'd be getting left. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to play him in the playoffs.
Nope.
And versus Connaughton, he's like, he was in the rotation for Portland this year. He wasn't good. I'd rather have Hollis-Jefferson than Connaughton. It was great to get rid of Plumlee, who then, I mean, the fact that Plumlee, the trade that sent Plumlee from
Portland
to Denver
was
crazy. Just because the first went the wrong way in that trade.
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. Just like really, really stellar trade.
But I guess
Blazers,
like it's good to get off Plumlee if that contract he ended up signing, which with Denver, which could be an anomaly, but that's a really big contract. If that was the market value, then you weren't ever going to want to pay him that. So get off him while he still has some value. Steve Blake, that's a wash. Hollis Jefferson, I mean, it's more like because he was just a second round pick at the time.
No.
So they really, or was
he was
the first?
Yeah.
He was a first?
Yep.
Okay. So they maximized that. I mean, he was a good pick for his slot too. So yeah, I'll give that a B.
Yep. And then July 9th, 2015, they re-signed Brook Lopez to a 3-year, $60 million contract.
Wow. See, that's tough to give a grade to. I'm going to give that a C+.
Yeah, so I gave it a B on the idea that, look, he provided them, they made the team a little more watchable for a couple years. You know, like, that's important, keep fans engaged.
He's the all-time leading scorer in franchise history. Like, you pay some for that kind of sentimental value, I guess, even and especially when you're horrible.
Yeah, and then I think if you ultimately look at the trade that happened where he went to the Lakers for Mozgov and Russell, his contract was probably treated as a slight positive, of the slightest positive to neutral value if you look at the assets moving back and forth. So that suggests that, look, that contract didn't age poorly. It ultimately worked out fine, and it made the Nets like a team that weren't very good adequate. Now, there's opportunity costs of not spending $20 million elsewhere, but I think when a guy's been around for a long time, your team is that bad, like, that's money that you have to actually allocate and, like, fan capital, which is an important thing to consider for these teams always.
Yeah. The weird thing is I really liked the trade that brought back Mozgov and Russell. So in a weird way, the fact that Lopez's salary was so high allowed them to do salary matching for that trade. And, like, that was a really good archetype of trade. Take on a young player who was disappointing but still had a lot of potential. And the tax of taking that guy is you just take on a bad contract. Like, that was really good for where they were at as a franchise. And Lopez unlocked that for them.
Yep.
The move in a vacuum, the day it was signed, it's like, geez, you're giving $20 million to Brook Lopez when you know you're going to suck. I felt like part of it was just rewarding him because so many guys had been like, please get me out of Brooklyn. I hate it here. It's a terrible environment. And Brook Lopez always had a good attitude and he stuck around. And they ended up sending him to LA where I'm sure he's happier, even if he might not admit it.
Yeah, who knows where he'll go this summer. I mean, possibly a candidate to return if they want to compete.
Yeah, if the Lakers are good next year, you bring Brook Lopez back for nothing. But that's only, they're going to need some free agents to come through.
Okay, and then on July 11th, 2015, the Nets bought out the final 2 years of Deron Williams' contract for $25 million. He was due $43.5 million, so he gave up, you know, $18.5 million.
I give that an A+.
I had the exact same grade.
Dude. Oh my God! Imagine sacrificing. I mean, look, I don't like Brooklyn or anything. Like, I'm not in a hurry to live in Brooklyn personally. But you know, for $18 million, I could probably find some reasons to stick it out there.
$18 million.
We make slightly less than that to podcast right now. But you know,
right? I mean, look, I think, you know, by the end of the year, we could be touching $18 million in podcast revenue. But we're not there yet. You know,
right. We're not at, like, Deron Williams buyout money.
No, but, you know, look.
Imagine that, though. That's a crazy buyout.
Look,
man.
I could see in a few years, it just, you know, the podcast revenue being so much, and we just not be able to take doing it with you anymore, that I would take a buyout where I cut mine by 18.5.
Yeah, true. Maybe it will just become such a toxic environment that, you know, we don't really know what was happening behind the scenes. Sorry to laugh at Deron Williams, but, like, that's got to be the most money anyone's ever sacrificed in NBA history that was guaranteed to them.
Yeah, I can't think of any other time.
I can't think of anyone who sacrificed more than that.
No. Pretty amazing.
So I guess in a weird way, good for you.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately,
for prioritizing happiness over money. Yeah. You know, in our capitalistic society, we're told to just, like, make the most we can all the time, that money's happiness, that's what defines you. But not living in Brooklyn is what defines Deron Williams, and I respect that.
And then on July 17th, 2015... made a very, very important move. They signed Andre Bargnani. That's an F. An F always, no matter what.
Yeah, there's no spin I can offer. I will also give that an F. The real issue with that deal is that even though it was a tiny guarantee, they did give him a guaranteed money for the second year. He didn't even make it through the end of the first year on the roster. He didn't even make it through, like, the first week once they hired Sean Marks mid-season.
So January 10th, 2016, they fired Lionel Hollins. Look, Lionel Hollins, that's a really tough, like, break for him to end up having to coach that roster and everything.
Yeah, that wasn't his fault. I mean, you know, it is what it is. Like, whoever was coaching the team, I guess it makes sense. Like, we actually really like what's ended up happening. Yeah. So if that's what had to happen, then so be it. But it's not like Lionel Hollins was going to coach him up and make him good.
No, I agree. And then on February 18th, 2016... the Nets hired Sean Marks as GM. A+.
That's just the kind of, like, pivotal moment that can change a franchise forever.
Yep.
And then the follow-up move.
Yeah.
what was February's... the date? Hang on. What was the date that they hired Sean Marks?
They hired Sean Marks on February 18th, 2016. On February 20th, 2016, 2 days into the Sean Marks tenure, The Brooklyn Nets waived Andre Bargnani.
He wasn't even done moving into his office yet. Sean Marks still probably barely knew anyone's names, and he was out here waving Bargnani.
A plus.
Yeah, it's hard not to respect that. You know, he wanted to make a wave. And then a couple days later...
Yeah, February 25th, they waived Joe Johnson.
A week later.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Joe Johnson buyout happened, and, like, that was kind of tough because Joe Johnson, he did end up... like resurfacing and having a good that was he signed with the Heat.
Yep, signed
and
with
he was
Heat.
Like actually good for them in the playoffs.
And then he signed the contract
and he's
with
been
the Jazz.
Good.
Yep.
He was like pretty good on the Jazz. But yeah, that year with the Nets, he really looked cooked. And like granted it was a terrible situation. They were an awful team and he knew it was going nowhere. But like if he had played better, they probably could have or at least maybe could have found a trade partner. I guess the money just
well he was
really
he was
sense.
An expiring contract and there's no way to get him off that deal because he's making like $22 million. It was too big
True.
To fit
that
into
was
a contender.
Huge fucking deal.
Look, waiving him, they saved a couple $1 million
yeah.
doing it,
and it's like
it
a good,
good
faith gesture.
Good
they
optics.
Let him go and play for a playoff team.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, hey, shout out to ISO Joe.
Yep, like that. And then we're not going to grade this move, but on February 28th, 2016, they signed Sean Kilpatrick to a 10-day and eventually signed him to a multi-year deal on March 19th.
Yeah, he's really been a player. And then yep. he's like been on a couple other NBA teams too, but it kind of seems like he's on his way out of the league.
Yeah, but just
he's like really a fringe guy, replacement level player, but you know, he's the kind of guy who when you're in the Nets situation, you give a flyer to and see if he can make the most of that random opportunity.
And a perfect example of a guy who just like, he's one of the guys who the Nets were bringing in on 10 days and eventually signed multi-year deals. And, like, shows the general thesis when Sean Marks has been in office to have the bottom of the roster churn and try
They've
to find diamonds in the
rough. Huge turnover. And they have, I mean, you know, they had Yogi Ferrell on their roster for a couple 10 days, but they didn't keep him around. It sucks, right? I'm sure they would have rather kept Yogi Ferrell than Sean Kilpatrick, but it's hard to make those decisions yeah. with only limited time with the players and limited roster spots.
So then on April 17th, 2016, they hired Kenny Atkinson.
I'll give that an A. I mean, I love the way the Nets play, you know? Like, I love how many threes they shoot. They play really fast. They seem like a smart, modern team. They just don't actually have the talent to win. But I still think they give themselves the best chance to win. And Atkinson, I can see him still being the coach when they start to improve. I don't think he's just, like, holding that seat, keeping it warm for whoever the eventual coach is. It might be him.
Yeah, I gave it an A-. I like that they shoot a lot of threes, too, and everything. It's been a little discouraging, the player development there. There's been some positive. Look, Caris LeVert's made steps. Jared Allen was a real surprise as a rookie. But, you know, D'Angelo Russell not having a lot of success there is really disappointing. Look, Spencer Dinwiddie emerging is positive. But there's not been a ton of... I haven't seen enough yet in player development for it to be a full A, but it's an A-. I like him a lot, too. And I think, like, look...
That's reasonable.
It's better it's like, than a lot of the hires they could have made. So
yeah,
many coaching hires
We always
hires
talk
are
about
bad.
How, like, most coaches... If it's not Brad Stevens, all you're really looking for is a net neutral.
Yep.
Just don't hurt the team.
Yep, exactly. So then on June 23rd, 2016, so the 2016 NBA draft, they traded Thaddeus Young for the 20th pick to the Indiana Pacers for Caris LeVert. That's an A for me. I think that's great value for Thaddeus Young. He wasn't like, look, the Nets were bad. It wasn't any good to have a guy like Thaddeus Young on your roster. Get the 20th
right.
pick.
Yeah, no, I'll give that an A also, and I really appreciate the fact that they were making that kind of trade, because I'm sure there was an instinct, given that they didn't have their firsts, to try and stay okay and keep guys like Thaddeus Young around and be respectable, just so that they wouldn't be giving up the third pick, they'd be giving up the seventh pick, and that looks better, the optics are better,
but it's a sunk
for your
cost.
Actual, exactly, it's a sunk cost, and so for your actual outlook, it's just better to make that trade, even if it made them worse the following year, because now they have Caris LeVert, who is... I mean, you know, at the very least, they'll probably end up getting something for him when they flip him, or else maybe he ends up being a real guy. I see him probably as like a bench piece on a good team, but that's something.
Agreed. And then also during the draft, just a smaller move, but they traded the 55th pick that became Marcus Paige and $3 million in cash for Isaiah Whitehead, who was the 42nd pick. And it's just an example. Like, look, they leveraged their like
that's an aggressive move.
Big market ability to have money to spend and be able to send out cash like that to move up 13 spots in the second round. Like,
and know, last year, Whitehead played a lot. He was really bad. This year, he spent pretty much the whole year in the G League. You go up and down a lot, which they like to do. They're G League affiliates in Long Island, so they'll send guys back and forth like all the time. But
all the time.
Whitehead is still on the roster. I mean, yeah, that could be something, and that's an aggressive move. I don't think Marcus Paige is doing much.
Yeah, and I like that leveraging being a big market to like move up 13 slots in the second round.
Like,
right, that's
$3 million.
Like, yeah.
That's actually a crazy amount considering that's more money than
those guys got on contracts, guaranteed.
More.
Yeah, amazing. And then on July 7th, 2016, they signed Jeremy Lin to a 3-year, $36 million contract. What would you grade that?
I'll give it a B-. everything, given the market of the contracts that were being signed at that time, it wasn't a bad deal. It wasn't like over market value. It was probably just about at market value, given what we had seen from Jeremy Lin. He was like either a good backup guy who could run your offense with your second unit, or a bottom third starter. But it's, he's the kind of guy who, like, if you have him on your team, either as a placeholder to like help your young guards out, who you're hoping eventually unseat him, or else he's your backup, and if your starter gets hurt, you're really comfortable thrusting him into the starting role. So that's good money, and if he comes out and plays well this year, they could probably still flip him. But it's just, I mean, at the time there was no way for him to know this, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy at all during his time with the Nets.
Yes.
So. Results, it would be lower than this, but the actual contract, I'll give it B-.
Yeah, and I'll actually give it a B+ for all the reasons you mentioned. I think it would have been a really good contract if he stayed healthy. But on top of that, just non-basketball reasons. That's Jeremy Lin came up with the Knicks. You sign a guy like that, you're trying to like have any modicum of relevance and in the conversation. In the market. Yep. Yeah. I just, a lot of good non-basketball reasons to sign Jeremy Lin. On top of the fact that that would have been a steal of a contract if he'd been able to stay healthy. He was so good on the first year of that deal, and then, you know, got hurt the first night of the season this year. Just really,
that was brutal. Blow. Hopefully he's able to be back. I mean, he's a really fun guy to watch when he's playing well.
Yep. And then in July 2016, they signed a bunch of guys, so we're just going to rip them all off right now.
We're not grading this, are we?
Yeah. Trevor Booker, Justin Hamilton, Luis Scola, Grievous Vasquez, Anthony Bennett, Randy Foy, Yogi Ferrell, and Joe Harris.
This is what we're talking about, folks, with the roster turnover. All those guys did play minutes on the 16-17 Nets, some more than others. Some of them were back and forth from the D-League, it was still called at the time. The only guy we really care about who we think has much of an NBA future from that is Joe Harris, right?
NBA future with the Nets, Yogi Ferrell, of course.
Yogi Ferrell, yeah. Yogi Ferrell's going to stick in the league, too. But yeah, right? I mean, they didn't really have him for long enough to reap any benefit.
But it's a perfect example.
Joe Harris, I mean, that's the guy who you're looking for when you do that massive turnover at the bottom of your roster.
Exactly.
And they gave him his shot. It's unfortunate that kind of seems like they might lose him now.
Right, that's a bummer, but...
I mean, I imagine he'll probably be making like $7 or $8 million a year next year. He can definitely shoot. Yeah, I think how many guys can you really count on to hit threes?
I think he'll be, I mean, not many. That's true. And he can really can't shoot, but I just see him more in the $4 to $5 million range. So we're nitpicking at that point.
It does make a difference because, right, then you start to talk about, like, is he the full mid-level exception?
Yeah, mini mid-level.
Part of it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then... the next move, which is a very important one for us, we want to talk about. From November 2016 to February 2017, Chris McCullough was assigned to the G League 19 times.
This was their 2016 first-round pick? It took him with the 29th pick?
Yes.
That was 2016?
No, this was 2015. Okay. 2015.
So this is his second year in the league. Yes. He's just, I mean, he was always a project, but he just bounced back and forth between Brooklyn and Long Island. I hope he took the train. Well, that'd be a lot of time sitting in traffic otherwise.
19 times, pretty impressive. And you know what? I give this move an A+, because it shows they're utilizing the G League the way teams are supposed to.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. And to, like, I mean, it makes sense. I'm sure what they probably would do, because NBA teams have so many more resources than G League teams, is they would call him up when they had time off and they really wanted him to be practicing with the NBA team and getting that, like, nutritional advice and strength training and all kinds of stuff that the D/G League doesn't really have. But they knew he wasn't going to play in games.
Yeah.
Like, he just, I mean, the guy's out of the league now. But that does seem like a decent strategy for player development.
Yep, and I just, look, the G League teams are doing that more now, but that was kind of
still
early.
We're big advocates for the G League. We really want to see it succeed.
Yeah, it would be really fun if the G League was actually something worth following and getting, like, invested
in.
Maybe
it could even, like, supplant college basketball or something.
I don't know. I'd be really sad. I guess my Badgers wouldn't lose any of the talent they're picking up, you know?
The Badgers aren't exactly competing with the pro. No, I mean, that's a whole different pod. I'll probably upset some people if I talk about college sports.
Yeah, so then on February 22nd, 2017, the Nets traded Bojan Bogdanovic and Chris McCullough to the Wizards for Andrew Nicholson, Marcus Thornton, and a 2017 first.
That's an A.
Yeah, there's that 2017 first
became Jared Allen.
Became
so
Jared Allen.
And they
so
didn't know
A++.
That at the time, but it was a good premise because they weren't, I mean, McCullough was a sunk cost. They had to take back some of those contracts, right? But
the Nicholson
mostly
one,
just to
basically.
Match salary. Because
that Nicholson was...
is actually a bad
deal. The Wizards signed him the summer before that trade to a four-year, $26 million contract, and they already wanted to dump him months into the contract.
Talk about teams just, like, spending money for no reason, summer of 2016. But anyway, that was a good deal because Bogdanovic wasn't going to help them. It's the same dynamic we've been talking about where it's a veteran player on a bad rudderless bad team, and they got a first back, and the first turned into a guy who actually, I mean, has more value than Bogdanovich.
Has more value than anyone else on the roster.
Definitely. If they were to put him on the trade block right now, they'd definitely get back more than the 22nd pick or whatever he was drafted.
Absolutely. At a minimum, I think the Suns would jump in a second to trade the 16th pick for him, like in a heartbeat. So yeah,
he really seems like he's going to have legitimate defensive value, and he's a guy who's down to just run to the rim and play pick and roll. He doesn't, like, you know, use up too many possessions. Yep. I really enjoy watching him.
And then on February 23rd, 2017, they traded cash considerations for KJ McDaniels.
Another tough break for cash considerations. He just gets sent all over the league. You know, he could never stay in one place for too long.
Yeah. But,
what did KJ McDaniel's mom have to say? Anything? Or did she decline to comment?
I declined to comment, I think.
We're trying actually, to have her on the pod, but unfortunately, no guarantees.
Unfortunately, at that point, she was already practicing her German for his next stop.
Ooh. All right.
And then on June 22nd, 2017, the Nets drafted Jared Allen at 22.
And, like, we already kind of revealed the fact that we like that pick. We think it's an A. We think he's a legit.
That's like an NBA A++ guy. Turnout for the 22nd pick to have one of the guys who you think is, like.
Yeah, we definitely think that he is, like, a solid. Projects to be a solid starter.
Yes, absolutely. You're very comfortable. Like, I actually feel very comfortable with the Nets at the center position moving forward.
I wouldn't prioritize getting a center.
Not at all.
Especially given the glut of centers. Yeah. They really just need wings and guards.
And then the other big move at the draft was they traded Brook Lopez in the 27th pick for Timothy Mozgov and D'Angelo Russell. The 27th pick did become Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't know that at the time. Right, that's just the 27th pick.
Evaluated as the 27th pick, as we always talk about. Yep.
So I'm going to give that trade an A-.
Yeah, so I, like, thinking at the time, I think that trade was an A. We both really liked it at the time.
Yep.
I think the way it's worked out, you have to feel lower on it. D'Angelo Russell did not show much progress.
He's had a bad first year, and the Mozgov contract is huge. Mozgov has played for them, and, like, it's just
You're never getting off that. And it sucks that the 27th pick ended up becoming Kyle Kuzma. Look, it doesn't actually matter.
That's just kind of bad luck. Who knows who they would have picked.
But the optics still aren't great.
No, Kuzma's legit.
And I just, you know, we'll talk more about D'Angelo, but a frustrating first year at the Nets. You know, still, I think, has high potential, but you definitely have to feel worse about him now than you did 12 months ago.
And how is he
going to
mesh next year with Jeremy Lin? And, like, what is going to even... Well, I think not to mention Spencer Dinwiddie. Right, their roster is really confusing for next year. We'll get into this more as the offseason goes too, and once we actually see what
some
the
tough
Nets
decisions.
Do. But they do have some tough decisions, yeah.
And then on July 13th, 2017, they traded Justin Hamilton for Damari Carroll, a 2018 first and a 2018 second. The 2018 first became the 29th pick in the draft, and the 2018 second became the 40th pick in the draft.
Wait, the 29th pick in the draft?
Yeah, from the Raptors.
Is that guaranteed? I thought that how they did that was...
It's not.
It's just record-based. It's not
regular
playoff
season.
Elimination.
It's in the in the NFL they do in the playoffs.
So the 30th pick will be the Rockets no matter what?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, I like Damari Carroll. I think Damari Carroll's contract is kind of passing the Nene test, especially given
his play this year.
Yeah, he was good this year. And then they got a first. It was a late first. I mean, hopefully they do better than Chris McCullough this time. That second, that's a really late second, right?
40th pick.
Oh, it's the 40th pick.
So it's
one
not of the value
Raptors
seconds,
second.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good pick. So then I'll give that trade an A.
Yeah, I gave that a trade A too. I just think Damari Carroll, at a minimum, is just providing really good veteran leadership and quality play for you. I think they should trade him this summer if they can get off his money at all, or if they can get a tiny asset back or flip, like take a contract that's... It's still an expiring contract, hopefully, but not as good of a player. And they trade it. You know, there's ways to work around it, but probably want to move on for him. But look, the fact that it's even possible that that is a neutral asset and you got a first and a second for it just last summer is really, really, really encouraging.
Yeah, that's a great trade. And that, you know, kind of fits the model of what we're talking about and what we think they should have been doing and they have been doing, which is taking on bad money in exchange for future-looking assets. Because they're going to be bad right now no matter what.
Yep. So then July 25th, 2017, they traded Andrew Nicholson for Allen Crabbe.
Yep, and this was just a straight salary dump or like a bad contract for bad contract, basically. Yep. I mean, I like Allen Crabbe a lot. He shot like 8 threes a game this year on good percentage. Seems like he could help a good team, but he's owed 17 a year for the next 2 years.
18 and a half.
Jeez. So the only way you're getting off Allen Crabbe is you take back somebody with a slightly less horrible contract. But I think that Allen Crabbe can at least shoot threes. So, I mean, what we talked about, I think that, like, there's some logical premise that you could build around a Mahinmi for Crab trade, with the Wizards also giving up some like future asset. Because Mahinmi is an example of a guy who's just like completely dead money, and Crab isn't totally dead money. But anyway, that original trade, well, they were already stuck with Nicholson. That was bad. I'll give it a B.
So I'll give it a C, because I just view, I think the Nicholson contract was really bad. You know, and there was 3 years left of that, that like $7 million a year or so. But the Allen Crabbe contract, it's a really big deal. There's a lot of opportunity cost in that $18.5 million each year. There's other things that money could have been used for. It could have been used to bring in a first and a second, like it was for Damari Carroll. And as cap space is even tighter this summer than it was last summer, that might have brought in even more. So I just think, I think ultimately the opportunity cost of Allen Crabbe compared to Andrew Nicholson, if you think about it, is $11.5 million. Even though I think $11.5 million for Allen Crabbe on a good team is actually a fairly reasonable contract, on a team like the Nets, you don't want to pay anyone $11.5 million. And you guys should conceptually think of the Allen Crabbe contract that way, because it's how you understand like the difference, in its value.
I mean, at least they didn't like stretch Nicholson.
Well, true. I mean, that Nicholson is on the Blazers' books for 7 years.
It's
like,
terrible. Just the taking stretch up, provision. I mean, imagine what their roster is going to look like by the end of that. And they're still going to be... They basically just like cut themselves... They gave themselves a haircut for almost the next decade. They're just going to be playing with a different cap than the rest of the league.
The stretch provision...
You got to just bite the bullet there.
Yeah, you just... I mean, look, the problem is they were trying to duck the luxury tax and everything. But, you know, there's other ways they could have gone about that. Like, you do not put $2.5 million on your books for 7 years under any circumstances ever. The stretch provision is... actually almost always bad for teams, except in very, very rare circumstances.
Because you want to just get those bad contracts over with as soon as possible.
It's years, not dollars so much. And it's so tempting to just stretch a guy and cut that number down so you can sign someone else this year and everything. It's like the devil's fruit is the stretch provision and everyone falls for it. But I think that it often comes back to bite teams.
So, yeah, the Allen Crabbe trade, I liked your take on that, even though we had different opinions.
So then on September 12th, 2017, they signed Tyler Zeller to a 2-year deal at the minimum, which is just important. We'll get to it. He's in a trade later.
We're not grading that, are we?
No, no. Okay. And then December 7th, 2017, they traded Trevor Booker for Jahlil Okafor, Nick Stauskas, and a 2019 Knicks second.
I mean, I guess I'm going to give that trade a B+.
Yeah, give it an A-.
You take, I mean, that Knicks second is actually a good pick because the Knicks suck. And will continue to suck this upcoming year. There's no way they're not going to suck.
They could be. I mean, that could be one of the
really
best
bad.
Picks.
Well, we don't know what Kristaps' timeline is yet, but they could be really bad. And then, I mean, Stauskas and Okafor, I strongly don't believe in. I'm really, really sure that those guys suck. But they did have the draft pedigree, and it's still. I mean, you know, you buy low on enough guys who are drafted high, you'll find a diamond in the rough. But those specific guys. It's a diamond in the deep rough.
Well, I want to put in a word
if
here.
If they do come in and become good.
I've heard from a lot of people who adapt the vegan diet that it takes a year to really set in and you start to see the physical benefits. And so I think, you know, year two of vegan jaw.
Vegan jaw. The return of vegan jaw. I mean, it'll be funny. I hope he's still on the Nets this year so we can talk about him all year. But
I hope he's still in the NBA. I mean, that's really more at the point. Like, he might not be back.
That would be a really, really quick... departure. Jeez, man.
And they waived Sean Kilpatrick as part of that trade. But I still think I give that an A- because I think that Knicks pick is it's going to be like...
It's another bite at the apple. That could be another
contributor or role player. It's probably going to be a top 35 pick, you know, 31 to 35 somewhere. That's a really good second round pick. And you got a chance to, you know, look at Okafor and Stauskas, and you just lost Trevor Booker, who's on an expiring contract anyways.
Yep.
And then February 5th, 2018, they traded Tyler Zeller for Rashad Vaughn and a 2018 second, which became the 45th pick. So what I like about this trade, I get this B+. They turned Tyler Zeller, who they signed, you know, 6 months earlier or 5 months earlier, into a second round pick. Wonderful. Perfect.
Yeah. And Vaughn, I mean, Vaughn is only like 21 years old.
Well, they traded him to New Orleans like the next day for Dante Cunningham. And then New Orleans cut him.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I was going to say that Vaughn hasn't shown anything to suggest that he'll ever be a good NBA player, but he is extremely young. But, I mean, I don't know. Gerald Green made it, you know. Like, Vaughn could just bounce around and then eventually get it together. But it's not super likely. But that second round pick, I agree, for a guy that they just signed to the minimum, that's a good value prop. I'll give that whatever you gave it, B+.
Yep. And that's how we got to the point where they're at, you know. And
So now, I mean, I imagine we'll probably like do another off season pod. There'll be plenty of chances to talk about where Brooklyn's at, but they have some interesting decisions coming up this year. We both agree and have said every time that we could that we want them to be as bad as possible this season.
They have about $15 million in cap space heading into this summer.
we'd like to see, what we'd like to see them do is make trades to take bad money from other teams in exchange for picks and not just throw that money at guys that are going to make them better right now.
Yeah.
But because there's such a shortage of cap space, they might be tempted to try to sign somebody. I mean, we'll see. The other thing I do like that they've done in the past, I'd expect to see from them again, is when they overpay restricted free agents to try to steal them from teams. If they wanted to go after like a Julius Randle,
I think that could be an interesting target. I mean, is $15 million enough for Randle? I guess that is right now. I guess
it depends. It might not be Randle. It might be somebody else.
I guess Randall's probably right in that range.
That's right around what Randle should be expecting.
Not enough for Gordon, probably. I don't know. It's tough. This is an interesting restricted free agent market. I don't know where these guys are going to fall because they're.
But they could also easily swing another trade to open up even more space and then offer Gordon.
Yep.
A guy I would really like to see them go after is Nerlens Noel.
Yes.
Another, any kind of buy low candidate, because they have been and still to an extent are so deprived of talent.
Yep. Nerlens is just, a buy low backup center to Jared Allen.
Yep.
Yeah, that's another interesting option.
We think it'd be nice if they could get something for Spencer Dinwiddie. If there's a contending team that thinks he could give them a boost to their second unit.
And the basic round point pick, is just being that we view him as a really good player. But the most value with Spencer Dinwiddie right now is the fact that he makes the minimum, and he's worth way more than the minimum. And there's only one more year of that surplus value existing, and there's no point in the 2018-19 Nets using that surplus value, because all it does is generate extra wins, and we want them to be as bad as possible. So really utilize that contract to bring in assets so you can cash in that surplus value in the future instead of in a year when it's futile.
Also, the Nets need at least one more year of giving D'Angelo Russell ample opportunities just to figure out what they have there, so they know if they need to upgrade or, if D'Angelo Russell is actually a real piece. Because he was a former number two pick. Like, those guys, and maybe he's just a slightly late bloomer. Look what Oladipo did this year.
Yep.
Like, not everyone progresses at the same rate.
Now, this is kind of moving more in the future, and we'll talk about this much more later on, but initial thoughts. Would you at all be interested in signing D'Angelo Russell to an extension this summer?
It would have to be pretty cheap. If he were willing to sign, if he wanted to sign like a 4-year, $36 million extension,
okay,
I would sign him to that.
So I was thinking the number I had in my head was a 4-48, like the Kemba Walker one under the old CBA. I mean, that's a much lower contract now, and that's not even valuing like that point. That's where I would be like, all right, like the possibility of him becoming a $20 million a year player
could be such a steal.
Is worth it.
And look what, I mean, Kemba was never good on his rookie deal. So many guys. And, like, granted, this was a unique situation because of his ankles, but look at the contract Steph Curry signed after his rookie deal. Not saying D'Lo, Steph Curry. We're just saying guys get better after that rookie deal, and it's usually a good contract.
And
so I would be trying to keep D'Lo around, especially because, you know, they did, like, give up some assets to get him.
Oh, yeah. And I just, like, I don't think he would accept that offer at all. I don't think that's realistic. I think
he's
going
to try
to.
He probably thinks he's about to have a breakout year, and you know he should be confident. Hopefully he does. And it's also, he's going to be a restricted free agent. So if you're the Nets, you say, fine, go earn that money.
Yep.
We're still going to match it. We're probably keeping you here.
Yep. And that's kind of how I feel about that.
Any other interesting guys on the roster you think are worth talking about?
Well, I think we talked a little about Joe Harris. I mean, would you be willing to bring Joe Harris back for $4 or $5 million a year if you're the Nets?
The only reason to is because you don't want to lose him for nothing, and you definitely could eventually trade Joe Harris to a good team. Joe Harris has so much more value to a good team than he does to a bad team, because even if you're only playing him for 8 minutes a game, you need a guy who you just know can stand in the corner and teams have to pay attention to him. He helps your spacing. He doesn't demand the ball. And for his role, he plays pretty solid defense. He's hard-nosed.
That's why I sort of like the idea of keeping him around. I'm not always one to scream about keeping guys for $4 or $5 million. It's actually really counter to what I believe in.
But you don't usually want the middle-sized contracts in the NBA.
The idea just being that if you can get him for 2 years, like $8 million total or something like that, like sign me up for that, because he provides spacing, as you talked about. And if you're trying to see what you have in D'Angelo Russell, and you're trying to see what you have in Jared Allen,
you want to see what they look like in a modern NBA
with
offense,
some spacing,
which includes
exactly
a guy like Joe Harris.
Exactly.
Who can really shoot and actually threaten you from three.
Exactly. So that's kind of how I feel about them. I mean, we talked a little about Carroll and everything, I think. And then Rondae Hollis, we talked about. I think it's
Caris LeVert, we talked about him. We like him.
Yep.
Not in a hurry to see him go. And he, again, is stuck in that logjam in the backcourt. So they do need to make some kind of move.
Yeah. The one thing I find tough with the Nets, I just want to talk about a little, because we talk a lot about kind of aligning guys' contracts so that you have certain summers where you have ample cap space and everything.
Yep.
It's tough for them because D'Angelo's salary is going to go up in 2019-2020 if they keep him. And, you know, Mozgov and Crabbe are on the books for 2019-20. So it's not till 2021 where you could actually feasibly see them having like ample, well, ample.
I mean, Mozgov and Krabs deals are so big though. That's basically 40 million off the books. So 40 million off, plus if they don't take on any more money that goes past then, they could potentially.
That's,
you know,
their summer.
You're
is
taking,
I'm say. It's that
you're taking 55 or 60 million off, and sure, you're paying D'Lo. I mean, D'Lo already makes a lot though, because he was the second pick. If he's getting a raise, it's only going to be from like 5 million to 10 million. That doesn't break you.
Well, I mean, it's possible. Like, let's not rule the possibility that he has a breakout and his
true
next contract is 18 to 20.
But he also could be gone.
Could be gone, exactly.
That's the other thing.
But yeah, so I kind of view that that's that summer of 2020, 2021. So summer 2020 is kind of their window. It will be interesting. So I want to make sure
hopefully,
they always keep
hopefully they get somebody good and interesting and appealing in next year's draft.
Yes,
that'll be the story of this year. Is like when we talk about the Nets, we'll already from an early point be talking about the main prospects for next year and how they fit. And
yeah,
we hope they're bad enough to make that a real conversation.
I mean, I think we feel we hope every team, every one of our teams besides the Suns, is bad enough to be in that top draft.
Yeah, and even the Suns, it's like if thing, it's like you start out the year trying to be good, but you're totally ready to pivot to tanking if and when things go
the
wrong.
The dream for the Suns, because the Western Conference is still going to be really good, is they show a lot of promise early on, they show them development, then they kind of tank or fall back at
you
the
want,
end, and they end up with like the like seventh or eighth pick, and they get one more dip as like a mid lottery pick.
I was going to say you want to have a year like the Lakers had this year.
Yeah, that's a great
year.
Next year. Yep.
All right, is that pretty much it for us?
Yeah, I think that's all. Cool. We'll be back. We're probably going to touch on the Atlanta Hawks next for one of these team rebuild recaps. And
thanks for listening, folks. We're going to have that theme music either sooner, or if not sooner, then probably later.
Yeah, and look, it's really good, I promise. And also,
it'll be worth the wait.
Yeah, just keep watching Bad
NBA
basketball.
A great man once said, sorry for the wait.
All right, thank you very much. Talk to us later.